The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
We started yesterday's programme by talking to Frank Greeny from the courts about the sentencing hearing of the taxi driver Raymond Shorten, who was found guilty of the rape of two young women in his taxi, who gave the most dreadful excuse in his defence, trying to claim that these women had agreed to the sexual encounters when he had taken advantage of them and had raped them. We didn't get a chance yesterday to talk about the sentencing of Jonathan Moran, who got 9 years for the rape of Blanaid Rally. She, a woman who has bravely come forward, waived her right to anonymity to explain what it was had happened, and also to ensure that he was brought to full justice by having his identity revealed as he heads to prison for 9 years. But these and other issues make you depressed about how violence against women happens so regularly. And I remember back when Aisling Murphy was murdered by Joseph Pushka, and the revulsion and the horror that was felt in the country at the time, and then the trial when he was convicted. And we hear every time that this cannot happen again, and we don't want it to happen again, and yet it does happen. We've two guests with us, Nolene Blackwell, solicitor and gender-based violence consultant, but first Professor Louise Crowley from the UCC School of Law and director of the Bystander Intervention Programme. Louise, how depressing is it that every time we say never again, it seems to happen again?
Yeah, good evening, Matt. We've been saying it for a long time, and yet here we are again. I do genuinely believe that when these incidents, horrific incidents, are reported, like you referenced Aisling Murphy's murder, the nation is paralysed. And we do hear the outcry of no more and what can we do about this? And we did see it, you know, in January when Aisling Murphy was murdered a couple of years ago, that there was a real, I certainly experienced it with my training, a desire, particularly by men, to step up and realise their role. The vast majority of men who do not behave in this way. But it seems that those who do so with impunity, without any, it seems almost, fear of consequences. And unfortunately, that plays out when we see the sentencing that is happening. So even though there is without doubt a societal rejection of this behaviour, it continues. So we are not doing enough, we are not reaching enough people, and we are not recognising the ways in which we can do something. We'll never stop some people, but there are cultures we can address, there are behaviours we can challenge ever before it gets to these horrific incidents that we're hearing about.
What do you think, Nolene Blackwell?
I was taken by Blanaid Rally's when she was giving her talk after the conviction of Jonathan Moran, and she was talking about, in some ways, nearly the surprise. This was someone from her own social circle in a town in the Midlands in Ireland, someone who was just going about his own business, who clearly didn't understand what that non-consensual sexual intercourse or any kind of non-consensual sexual activity was an offence and was wrong. And that, again, the same judge that sentenced Jonathan Moran sentenced another man yesterday, a doctor, and he made the point, he said he can't get over how many people just don't seem to get the understanding that consent is crucial in sexual activity. So I think it is, all of these cases are horrific, and each of them changes at least one life and probably several. And each victim is really damaged and hopefully will heal along the way. But the truth is that we are probably talking only about consent in the past 10 years. It is less than 10 years ago since we put it into black and white in legislation that if someone was asleep and you had sex with them, that was rape, because you can't have someone consenting while they're asleep, or when they're too intoxicated, or when they have, when they've taken too many drugs, or if they're forced in anyway. But it's less than 10 years since we had that in writing.
And yet have behaviours changed as a result?
Yeah, I think they are changing, but obviously not fast enough. And obviously with these cases coming on, people are still being damaged on a regular basis. But there is, I actually think maybe these cases weren't coming up so much before, Matt. People were not coming forward. A lot of women, and well, the victims victims of rape, and it has been mainly women I've heard saying this, they remind people in their victim impact statements that they don't carry the shame for the rape, that it is someone who had the non-consensual sexual activity with them. There is more of an emphasis on consent, and it is that business of, again, I think Minister McEntee was saying today, that gender-based violence, sexual violence, domestic violence, still an epidemic. And an epidemic, you know, we all now know from the pandemic, takes a whole lot of things to fix it. You have to give the healing to the victims of it. You have to stop the perpetrators doing it. And then you have to remind society as a whole that you need to have a way of working that doesn't allow it to be thought about and in the first place. So it's only 2 years ago since our junior cycle started to do healthy relationships education relating to consent. And in truth, all the teachers who are trying to do that still haven't had all the training they need. We haven't put it into our senior cycle in secondary school yet until September. And we don't do it at all with younger children.
Yeah, Louise, and I understand fully the point that Nolene is making about the requirement to do this in the schools. But how important is it that we don't just leave it to the schools, that this starts in the family, that this is parental responsibility to bring up children properly, to show respect to other people?
Yeah, I mean, undoubtedly, it's parental responsibility. But I mean, I do think times are changing and parents are becoming more au fait with the fact of consent and the ability to communicate with it, but not at all to the extent that we need it. So I think that we have to recognise the shortcomings of saying, well, that's a domestic, that's a private matter, that's for them to mention in the home. You know, that I think that irrespective of the home that you come from, we have to recognise that within the classroom, whether it's second level, whether it's third level, or even at primary age, that they are sitting as a collective of peers. And truly, I believe that is the most effective platform to share this understanding and to give the young people the opportunity to talk to each other. Because we all know, and I'm a mother of three teenagers, that we can share and have these conversations and identify and share the values of being a good person and a respectful person. But I think when those conversations happen at a peer level, that's where you can have a shared opinion, where you can have influence amongst peers. And I think that's where the real learning happens at a peer level. So if we can bring that to second level and third level in a very systemic and consistent way, we can ensure that everybody has the language. And whether they agree or not, they're exposed to it. And because we know the majority of people are respectful in all sectors and in all ages, that if those people feel empowered with the language to speak up and share their views of insisting on consent and recognizing that need and being able to call each other out if someone steps out of line, behaves or speaks in a way that indicates, you know, that they don't care about consent or any of those issues, that's where the learning can truly happen and where we can influence society, because it is all of society and it's a cultural issue. Because if people, particularly men, might understand consent, but the understanding of consent does not equate to ensuring that you get consent. So there has to be that further step whereby thinking that you can disregard consent and behave anyway, if that is seen by peers that they can do something about it in that moment, and we know they do it when they have that information and the belief that they're surrounded by like-minded people, but we're not there at all in the way that we need to be to allow this to really change in culture. And also, just to mention, this is not an issue just for second level and third levels. This is a cross-generational issue. You know, as much as we hear and see young women reporting and sharing their stories, you know, the reports from Women's Aid, from Dublin Rape Crisis Centre, and media reports tell us that there are many older women experiencing this. So we need to really think about the all of society piece and how education needs to reach everybody.
When we were on the programme yesterday as well, we spoke to Ivana Patrick, the leader of the Labour Party, in relation to a motion in the Dáil tomorrow about custodial sentences on the back of what happened to Natasha O'Brien and the suspended sentence for Cathal Crotty of the Defence Forces. Within a half an hour of that interview going to air, we did hear that the DPP is now appealing that sentence, so there is the possibility that the suspended sentence will become a custodial one. But Nolene Blackwell, in the case of rape, presumably there are always custodial sentences, are there?
Yeah.
When you have a conviction. There's never been a case of somebody getting a suspended sentence for rape, or has there?
But again, you're just the difference 10 years makes or 15 years makes in that matter is huge. Suspended sentences were quite often put 15 years ago. But over the past 10 or 15 years, that has become... There is still an exceptional, the current guidelines, there are no proper guidelines in this area, but the nearest thing we have is a really good case of about 3 or 4 years ago, which set down, 5 years maybe, set down some guidelines and said it is almost inevitable that there will be a custodial sentence. No court is ever going to say always, but almost inevitable. And I haven't heard of a non-custodial sentence for rape for a very long time. And they also have various rates. So for instance, they say the baseline for a rape sentence should be about 7 years. You know, as with the headline, you might drop it back if somebody pleads guilty or whatever along the way. But that if there is a breach of trust involved, then it goes up. If there are children involved, if there's particular humiliation involved, if it's within a family, there are added values. So there is something, but the trouble with sentencing is you can have, on the one hand, last month, you can have a serious assault on a woman, not a sexual assault, but a really serious gendered assault on a woman, which gets a suspended sentence. And in another case, you can have a serious rape yesterday, which got a 10-year sentence, cut back a little bit as well. So the trouble is we still don't have that sort of surety for somebody who reports a crime like this and is going in to what is already a vicious system, the court system, as to what the sentence will be at the end of it. And that's why we need much better data from the courts, better guidelines. They have things called bench books in England and Wales, where a judge kind of gets a whole lot of direction on the kind of things that they can do. They still give an individual sentence, but they have ways of framing it, which are much tighter than ours, and we really need to go there.
Professor Louise Crowley, I wonder, does the prospect of custodial sentences in the event of conviction perhaps act as a useful deterrent to male bad behaviour?
Well, I think certainly greater sentencing, greater consequences on their liberty, and also the growing waiving of anonymity whereby they're identified in public can only serve to deter. You know, whether it does or not, that's something that would require research. But I do believe that certainly the message that's currently going out, where you can, you know, assault someone or sexually assault someone and have a suspended sentence, can only be seen as an implicit suggestion that it is not worthy of a custodial sentence. And if there was ever the wrong message to send out to people who are inclined to behave in this way, well, this is it. So we need the message to go out. It's not good enough to say this is an epidemic, we need to do more. Well, very clearly we need action. And having, as Noeline has quite rightly said, much clearer and firmer instructions that give rise to consistent custodial sentences in these cases, that there will be no escaping the consequences of your action. That is an absolute base necessity if we were to have faith in the justice system.
Thank you very much, Professor Louise Crowley from UCC School of Law and Director of the Bystander Intervention Programme, and Noeline Blackwell, Solicitor and Gender-Based Violence Consultant.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today.